May it please the court. The district court erred when it denied Mr. Coppo's motion without holding an evidentiary hearing. The district court wrongly held that Mr. Coppo's allegations were vague and unsupported by any evidence. To the contrary, Mr. Coppo was not required to present evidence at the pleading stage, and he did make specific allegations that were detailed that, if proven, would have revealed what even the government concedes would be a shocking failure to provide any counsel on appeal. Moreover, to the extent that the district court felt bound to require evidentiary support at the pleading stage, the district court abused its discretion when it failed to provide notice to Mr. Coppo of the consequences of failing to file an affidavit with his motion.
Let me ask you this. Is it really your position that the district court has to give a pro se petition additional notice that the case might be dismissed when the pleading is deficient?
Well, I would respond in two ways to that, Your Honor. First of all, it is our position that evidence is not required at the pleading stage, so that is error to require that evidence be present at the time of pleading. And second, to the extent that doctrine remains good law, the district court abused its discretion by not notifying Mr. Coppo of his deficiency. This court has, in the past, required notice in several different contexts for pro se litigants who were, as the court has put it, particularly vulnerable. For example, in situations where in a 1983 case, the failure of a plaintiff under 1983 to provide affidavits as in response to a motion for summary judgment, of course, is fatal to that claim. And this court, in Lewis versus Faulkner, has required the district judge to provide notice to the 1983 pro se plaintiff of the failure to provide affidavits because of the vulnerability to misunderstanding of what the procedural rules are. I would suggest that there is no just reason for that reasoning not to apply here as well, where we have a pro se prisoner plaintiff or movant who asked the court for relief based on very concrete, specific, detailed allegations that he told his lawyer to file an appeal and his lawyer didn't. There's nothing vague, nothing conclusory, nothing nonspecific about those allegations, and Mr. Coppo lost solely on the basis that he didn't provide affidavits. It would not have been a significant burden for the district court to notify Mr. Coppo of the deficiencies in his filing and give him a chance to attach evidence at the pleading stage.
So then you would like us to adopt a rule that pro se plaintiffs should be given additional notice when their cases might be dismissed for failure to include an affidavit, for example, or whenever a pleading would be deficient?
Well, Your Honor, I don't know about whenever any pleading would be deficient, but under the circumstances of this case, where we have a pro se prisoner plaintiff who comes in and files a motion under Section 2255, there is no indication in the rules governing these proceedings that an affidavit has to be attached at the time of filing. So, yes, under the facts of this case, we are asking for a rule. If the court adheres to the affidavit requirement at the pleading stage, we are asking that the district judge give notice of a deficient filing.
And you agree, don't you, that 2B places petitioners on notice that allegations in a petition need to be made under oath? That's what 2B requires.
Yes, Your Honor, that is true. And we do not dispute that Mr. Coppo did not sign his motion under oath, and we do not dispute that he didn't provide an affidavit at the time of pleading. But we respectfully suggest that that issue was waived. The government came in its response brief and argued Rule 2B, but to the best of my knowledge, Rule 2B was never cited by the district court as a basis for its holding, and the government never argued Rule 2B to the district court. The government's sole contention with respect to the failure of Mr. Coppo, or with respect to Mr. Coppo's motion, was that he didn't provide any evidence. And so there are really two basic channels that we're talking about here. First of all, there's the issue of whether evidence needs to be presented at the time of filing, which I would suggest is inconsistent with this court's enforcement of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure and its protection of the notice pleading regime. And second, if that requirement, affidavit requirement, is going to stand, then a movement under Section 2255, who is pro se, without counsel, without access without legal training, for that matter, should not be denied the chance to present his concrete and specific claims at an evidentiary hearing without being notified of the failure to provide an affidavit at the time of filing.
Well, the district court, it's true, didn't cite 2B, but in the order, didn't the court say, and I quote, CAFO did not make his allegations in his motion, an amended motion under oath?
That is correct, Your Honor.
So wouldn't that constitute sufficient notice? Or shouldn't that constitute sufficient notice?
Well, to the extent that the district court was purporting to base its decision on the failure of Mr. Coffo to sign his motion under oath, I would suggest that the district court's rejection of Mr. Coffo's petition for a certificate of appealability makes clear that the basis of the district court's ruling was the fact that he did not present any evidence, not the fact that he didn't swear to his allegations.
And I just have one other question in this area. Has any other court adopted the view that the oath requirement should be viewed as an affirmative defense that can be waived?
Not to my knowledge, Your Honor, but I think that the logic of all the other examples where affirmative defenses in the habeas context under Section 2254, where affirmative defenses such as exhaustion and the like have been held to be non-jurisdictional, that can be waived by the state under Section 2254 when a petitioner under Section 2254 defendant under 2254 fails to raise those issues. Those can be waived. This is not a jurisdictional issue. This is akin to a procedural issue or a procedural argument that's been waived.
You're equating this filing with any civil filing. Is that what you're pleading?
I'm not equating this with any civil filing, Your Honor. What I'm equating this to is under the facts of this case, where we have a defendant's liberty at stake, where the movement is a pro se petitioner who has been denied relief on the basis of a common law requirement, or a case law requirement, rather, that appears nowhere in the rules, that under the facts of this case, it was an abuse of discretion not to provide notice to Mr. Coffo of the failure to attach an affidavit.
But you mentioned just giving notice pleading. What you're trying to make an equation with this?
I believe I misunderstood your question, and I apologize. Yes, I am equating this roughly to the notice pleading standard. Now, this court did note in Taylor versus the United States that Rule 2 does require some fact pleading, but as the court laid out in Taylor, there are analogs to traditional civil litigation. There is what the court called the analog to summary judgment, and the court did note that, I believe it noted in Taylor, that the federal rules of civil procedure apply in these cases to the extent they are not inconsistent with the rules governing Section 2255 proceedings. So to the extent that Rule 2 requires some fact pleading, yes, that is true, but the overall procedure is very similar to that of ordinary civil litigation. I see that I've entered my time for rebuttal. Unless the court has any further questions, I will reserve the remainder of my time.
Thank you, sir. We'll hear now from Mr. Porter.
Your Honors, thank you. As Your Honor, Judge Williams notes, what is going on here is a request to add an additional requirement on litigants in this case. And the issue here, of course, is whether Judge St. Eve abused her discretion in denying the motion after he filed his motion without an affidavit, without making it under oath. Those are plain requirements of Rule 2255 proceedings in the criminal context. And so civil rules unless they need to fill in, as counsel I think has now acknowledged, unless there's a need to sort of fill in those criminal rules, the civil rules don't apply. And here it is crystal clear that under Rule 2B5, under Rule 2C, which talks about the form that you are to use, and in our own local rules, which are also under oath, in three different places we have a requirement for pro se litigants, criminal litigants who are filing pro se motions under 2255, to do it under oath, to have an affidavit, whatever, but to provide that basis for testing what it was that they said and what it is that they're arguing.
But don't we have a waiver situation here? How do you respond to his argument that the government forfeited any argument based on Rule 2?
Judge, the way this evolved, as you may recall, he had filed a motion which was just like almost every other motion that the government received in response to the Blakely Booker line of case law, seeking a lower sentence, saying that the loss figure shouldn't have been counted. And we filed a motion response that was almost identical to every response that the government filed, saying not retroactive, case is final. And then he filed a motion to amend his 2255 ruling, and at that point in time injected this issue of counsel and failure to file a notice of appeal. We responded both on procedurally by saying, hey, you can't amend back, but on the merits, and it was adopted by Judge St. Eve, the first several lines of our argument are, and I'll quote, defendant's claim of ineffective assistance significantly made without being under oath. We say that. We make that argument. We then, in the next sentence, point out that no affidavit exists either from the defendant or from family members, because he had made an allegation that family members had talked to his counsel, Mr. Carlson. We didn't cite Rule 2B. We didn't. But we made it plain that our argument in response to his on the merits was, he hasn't done this under oath. He hasn't either done it under oath through an affidavit or through signing his motion. And so, in our view, that doesn't come close to constituting waiver. We have made the argument. We've made it clearly, and the judge has thereafter adopted it. So,
what procedurally under Rule 4, the initial consideration by the judge, where she's doing a screening. In this case, what happened at that point where she did the initial screening and whether or not it was banned?
Well, she had it's hard for me to know, certainly, because she didn't comment on that in the orders that she had entered.
But your response, though, was based on just responding to the initial filing by the
we had filed an initial response to Mr. Cafo's initial motion, which was the Booker-Blakely motion.
Oh, okay.
He had then moved to amend his 2255 motion, and at that point in time, and that was after the 1 year, after the 1 year cutoff, and he had at that point in time argued for the first time that he had ineffective assistance of counsel.
So it was all right. It was an ongoing matter when this was. Ineffective assistance of counsel.
It was, and that's when it was interjected, and that's when we argued on the merits of that issue of the ineffective assistance.
Because it could have been, she could have dismissed it without you making a response to it if she saw it was not sworn to or whatever.
She could have. She absolutely could have. She had grounds to, because it didn't meet
but
any
not,
of the rules.
Was it already an ongoing matter?
It was. It was. So in this case, the Seventh Circuit case law is clear under Pruitt and the other cases, and there was one case that the defense had, or that Mr. Cafo had cited, the Bruce case, that sought to introduce some tension in this line of case law. But when we examine the Bruce case, there were affidavits there. There were dueling affidavits there, and so the Seventh Circuit had said, there is an issue here to consider. That case doesn't speak about this initial requirement to file an affidavit. It wasn't done here. There shouldn't be such a requirement made in these cases, and we therefore ask that Judge St. Eve be affirmed. Thank you.
Let me ask you this. Certainly a better practice might have been spelling out the fact that he didn't comply with 2B as the committee comments suggest. The committee comments for 2B suggest that that the court accept the faulty motion and direct the moving party to submit a corrected motion that conforms with the specific rule, because we wouldn't be here today if that had happened.
Perhaps we wouldn't have. That might have been a better practice, but I must say, Your Honor, that this is of the maybe almost 100 2255s that I've responded to. This may have been the first that wasn't part of that Northern District of Illinois form that is under oath.
And that form is like a fill-in-the-blank affidavit form, so it's got the language signed under penalty of perjury, so
right.
All somebody has to do is fill in the box.
Correct.
How much time does counsel have? 2 minutes, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor. Again, the issue of the form and the fact that Mr. Coffo did not sign his motion under oath, as Judge Caney pointed out, should have been addressed under the district court's screening function under Rule 4B. In the alternative, he should have, as Judge Williams suggested, under Rule 2B, the district court should have given Mr. Coffo a chance to refile his motion under oath. All of this goes to prove that the basis of the district court's holding was not the fact that Mr. Coffo didn't sign his motion under oath. It was that he did not provide detailed and specific allegations supported by evidence. Now, Mr. Coffo's allegations could not have been clearer. He said, "I told my lawyer to appeal," and he dropped the ball. So I don't know how much clearer he would have needed to be than that. And in addition, as far as the affidavit requirement goes, I've made my argument on that the affidavit requirement is potentially inconsistent with the rules governing these proceedings. And I would invite the court to revisit that. In any event, the district court should have provided Mr. Coffo notice of the deficiency of his filing, as it has done in numerous pro se situations and contexts before. Regarding whether we are seeking a new rule requiring judges to give notice before dismissal, whether or not there is a blanket rule requiring notice before dismissal of pro se complaints, there certainly should have been such notice in this case. Again, as the government said, this would, if these allegations, if true, would be a shocking failure to provide any counsel at all. To conclude, the district court was required to hold an evidentiary hearing because of the clear allegations of Mr. Coffo that would have entitled him to relief had they been proven. If the district court felt constrained by the affidavit rule, it should have given Mr. Coffo notice. In any event, the affidavit requirement is inconsistent with the governing rules and should be disavowed. This court should vacate the ruling below and remand this case for further factual development. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel, you appeared by appointment to the court, and you have the sincere thanks of the court for your very fine services on behalf of your client. We also thank your law firm for the time and that was certainly invested in this matter. Thank you. Indeed, our thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.